God help you if you use voiceover in your work, my friends. God help you. It's flaccid, sloppy writing.
I don't want you to be the guy in the PG-13 movie everyone's really hoping makes it happen. I want you to be like the guy in the rated R movie, you know? The guy you're not sure whether or not you like yet.
All right, and welcome to this second new Get Your Film Fix podcast. Joining me today is Jaben Hemingway and Tyson Malcolm. So, guys, we want to talk about Django, a movie we saw probably a few weeks ago, but we want to talk about it because it, first of all, because it's Tarantino, and he's always interesting to talk about, and second, because it deals with a lot of interesting sort of subject matter of slavery and making slavery funny and the use of the N-word and throwing that all into the Tarantino universe, which I know has caused a lot of controversy, so I might as well delve into the, I guess, morality a little bit of the movie, which is something that you sometimes have to set aside for a Tarantino movie. So how did you guys think Tarantino dealt with his subject matter, his very volatile subject matter in this movie? Chapin, we'll start with you.
Well, I think that's a good question, and I think it speaks to a larger question or a couple of questions that I think we should all explore. And I think the thing I'd like us to sort of keep in mind while we talk about this stuff is, you know, we are kind of privileged white guys, and we don't always talk about these aspects of stuff when we're discussing movies. And I think for the most part, that's a good thing. But
I don't see race myself.
Right. Well, but it would be good to maybe like step outside ourselves a little bit and try to look at things maybe from a different perspective. That might be difficult, but I don't know. I've been reading and hearing, listening to some interviews and articles about this stuff, and I'm not really sure where I stand. And I was sort of lamenting the fact that we weren't doing these podcasts when this movie came out initially, because I thought it begged a lot of questions.
Can I get to the root of it? Sort of like when you say you don't understand even where you stand, like what is really the, in your mind, the controversy? What are the two sides to even stand on? Which I still have a hard time even defining.
Okay, well let me just throw out what's not controversial. I don't think that Django is a racist movie because the N-word is used a lot, and I don't think, you know, and we can discuss that, but I don't think that's an issue. That seems to be sort of a superficial complaint. And I'd also like to throw out that I don't think, you know, just violence in general in movies necessarily means, you know, that, you know, bad or whatever. I think there's two topics to discuss. I think there's the issue of race, and I think there's the issue of violence. And I think that Django had the unfortunate timing of release coming out shortly after the Sandy Hook murders, the massacre. And
right.
I don't know. Like, I don't think – I mean, this was probably a discussion that was more appropriate during the the other mass shooting that happened this year or last year during the, you know, the Dark Knight, as it relates much more directly to movies. But I don't think you can necessarily dismiss either of those topics, race or violence, without some discussion. And I don't want to be overly sensitive about it either. But here's – okay, let me just tell you what my initial thoughts. I don't think, and I've never thought that violence in movies was influenced society. I don't think that people go see violence in movies and necessarily go and do crimes because of it. You know, I never bought into that rationale, and I don't think that movies depicting difficult situations on screen should be criticized for it. I mean, this is a movie about slavery, which is a difficult time, and I think it would be impossible to make a movie that made everybody feel that it was appropriate. Just a side note. So I was listening to an interview, a series of interviews that people should check out that the Hollywood Reporter did with a bunch of the nominees this year, and they broke.
I think they do it every year.
Yeah, they do it every year, and they broke it down like writers and directors. So there was a little bit of interesting stuff with Tarantino, but the one most interesting comment I found
is that the one where Tarantino could not say now I can't say it, temper tantrum.
Oh, maybe I don't know. But the one I thought was interesting was they started discussing Django in the writers the writers section of that series, and Michael Haneke was in that, and obviously I think he's Austrian, so he only speaks German, he doesn't speak English very well, and he was talking about that he brought up the shower scene from Schindler's List as an inappropriate movie, just in the fact that, you know, you're building suspense about you know, whether gas or water is going to come out of that shower scene, and that is a despicable act. Now that might seem ridiculous to us, because that, you know, Schindler's List seems like a pretty uncontroversial movie when, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but it's interesting to think about how different people view these movies. And the one issue I thought that might be there with Django is, should you make a movie that treats such a sensitive subject with such sort of – the only word I can think of is irreverence, in that they don't – you know, they set it a movie that's mostly about a revenge story and kind of a real fictional telling of a story in – a very, you know, wrapped in a very serious subject matter, and the tone isn't always, you know, respectful. Actually, it usually isn't. And so those are kind of the issues that I want to explore based on race and violence. But sorry, the one thing I should – I know I'm going on for a while, but the one thing I wanted to say is that I while I don't feel that violence in movies is directly influencing people – the one argument I have heard that has made sense to me is that we do, as a culture and as a filmmaking culture, sort of deify weapons and guns. Like, people are always turning to guns in movies as a solution. And that obviously a rational person can understand that that's dramatic and that's interesting. And people have been doing it since Shakespeare. I mean, you know, since, you know, the beginning of drama, and that, you know, that's interesting to watch. Violence is interesting to watch. But at the same time, I mean, we are sort of participating in this promotion of guns as a final solution. And to me, I don't know, that I that's hard to ignore. So I'll turn it over to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, my thought is this. First of all, this isn't the first time Tarantino's done this. I mean, he went in this sort of territory with his last movie, Inglourious Bastards.
Jeremy, did you see that interview he did where he kind of flipped out on that guy?
No.
Yeah, I read about it, but it's an interesting
interview.
But also, I've always said a movie's a movie's a movie, and what I mean by that is, you got to treat each film by its own accord. Now, if there's enough to justify, like, it, I guess it is all in the execution of the material. And when it comes to this argument, it's also, who are we defending this against? Like, who is this person or people or group that we are concerned with that would watch a movie like Django or any other violent film and then maybe go out and not necessarily just go out and commit, but get influenced to the point where maybe it starts to creep into their consciousness. Now, who are these people? If we're having this discussion, I don't think we're those people, right?
Well, I think that's a very direct way of looking at it, and I think that's the way most people see it, as this film is violent. Somebody crazy watches that film and then goes and commits a horrible crime.
I'm not talking necessarily individual. Of course. But like, why are we having this discussion? It's got to be for somebody. It's not
because I think
we're not just having it for like this, you know, just for the sake of the podcast and to, you know, be able to have this semi-intellectual discussion for ourselves, are we? Like, who is this group that we're focusing on when we're talking about that?
I think just to frame your answer, think of it maybe in terms of a sort of general society, and that if a movie reflects society or reflects back upon society, that we're basic, that the argument is that these films have sort of promoted that weapons, and specifically, you know, firearms are a solution to problems, and that generally there's been a sort of a deification of weapons and violence by film and media, and that has a general impact on society. And you could argue that in a couple different ways, but one could be the fact that, you know, the proliferation of weapons in this country could partially be due to that people think and have this idea that from mostly from media that, you know, weapons will keep them safe, when, you know, the data would argue just the opposite, for example.
I get what you're saying. I guess, like, it's sort of like hard to, there's two ways to look at this. You can look at it from the point of, okay, so how is this movie, you know, artistically as cinema? And then there's that aspect, which I do believe movies are a reflection, or can be if they want to be, a reflection of society. So hence, we're putting Django up there. We're all enjoying Django as a film because it's a well-made film and it's funny. But there is this total irreverence for violence and its use of violence, and we're just sort of accepting that as the way it is. So why are we accepting that as the way it is? Is that the way it is in society? So there's those weird, and I don't know how to connect the dots on those two things, really. I don't, are we, is it more of a sort of release for us in society, or is it the mirror thing, or is it a bit of both? And where does the line cross between, oh, we get that because, you know, that's humorous in that way because it's so over the top and it's so crazy and none of us would ever do that? Or is it like, oh, we're so cool with violence now, we totally get why that character has decided to perform that action at that time? I mean, I don't know, maybe that's where the line blurs and you have a hard time separating them. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Definitely.
Tyson, what do you think?
Honestly, I've been mildly embarrassed to admit I feel a little bit out of my depth. I think what is impressive to me about Django and a movie like Inglourious Basterds and Tarantino in general is his ability to sort of remove these concepts from, at least from me as a viewer, from my experience. Like, I understand that they're controversial and there's a lot of people who feel like this, like Chapin was saying, I think that irreverence is a perfect word. You know, there's a lack of respect about the way he's going about portraying these things that to him may not be as personal or relevant as maybe people who are speaking on it or family members or ancestors of people who are speaking on it. But to me, what is so impressive, and I remember talking with Chapin right after we saw this movie separately for the first time and then together for the second time, about wanting to do this podcast again to talk specifically about this movie, because I feel like Tarantino has such a talent when it comes to dealing with subject matter like this and finding a way to simultaneously make it, I said this in the podcast last week, both humorous and poignant and serious and emotional and, you know, all while I feel like not ever really crossing any line that's like reprehensible.
Okay, well, how about this? Like, we understand we kind of understand it both as people who enjoy movies, as filmmakers, what Tarantino is doing and why he's so good at it. And it's exactly what you said, Tyson. But is Tarantino kind of, I don't know if the word or the phrase go overboard, or has the right in a way to have this total irreverence for violence and total irreverence for how he constructs his stories in a sort of magnified way? Did he have a right to do that and also make some sort of moral statement, which he surely does on slavery and the horrors of slavery, or is it because it's slavery is such a, in a way, no pun intended, black and white issue that we just kind of go, yeah, it's okay?
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be the latter a little bit. I think he probably gets a little bit more leeway because if you're coming down on that side of the argument, if you, you know, I not to get personal, and this might be totally unrelated, Chapin's probably rolling his eyes, but we often got a lot of shit about the gray area because people thought it was racist, and I was trying to understand like how it was that people were viewing this movie that they would ever think that, because I felt like what we tried to do was make a statement about racism, like, you know, remove ourselves from the equation and talk about how ridiculous we feel like people are in these given situations. And that's what I feel that this movie does. And I think it's probably a lot easier for him to come down on that side of it. He probably gets a lot more freedom than if he was to make a movie where it felt like he was being sort of overtly racist. And so I don't think it's as bad. But for, you know, I wanted to say this and jump in earlier, but I thought Chapin was making a good point to touch on what you guys were talking about these movies and violence relative to culture of today. Like, I feel like violence in these kind of movies is a completely different type of cinematic violence than violence in a movie like End of Watch or something that I feel is a lot more relative to what's going on. I feel like violence in those movies is the kind of violence that we would want to be concerned with, not like played up comical violence where, you know, Jamie Foxx is hiding behind a thigh that gets shot and it looks like a ketchup packet explodes or 500 ketchup packets explode. You know, I mean, I don't think that violence in these, and I understand that they held back the release of the movie as a, you know, out of respect or as a courtesy, but I don't think this is the kind of violence that, or culture of violence that we would need, you know, deserves that type of concern.
Of course. I mean, the way that it's handled is, and that's probably its, you know, biggest argument against there being any real issue with it, is because it is handled in such a cartoonish way. But I guess what I was saying is he handles it in such a cartoonish way, but he does come down on the moral issue in a very sort of real way. And he does this in this, he does it in Inglourious Basterds, where he's like trying to, where he in a way rewrites history to become this revenge fantasy, like sort of a cathartic response to a historical past that we all can sort of get behind.
Yeah, that's a frustratingly accurate way to say it. I wish I had just said that.
I have no problem with it, but he does seem to blur that line where he's like, I mean, should we even take it as a statement as against slavery or against the Holocaust, or should we even let that cross our minds, or is it just sort of not a playful but I guess cathartic's the right word, cathartic way to deal with horrors of the past?
Well, see, I'll let Chapin answer that first, and then I'll answer it.
No, go ahead if you have an answer.
I would like to take it as the latter, just because for me, you know, I have a certain way that I like to see certain types of movies, you know, and I go see a movie like Silver Linings Playbook, and there's this big part of me that just wants it to work out between this couple that has nice chemistry, and it's not, you know, I go see The Dark Knight Rises, and Chapin and I leave, and he's pissed because Batman doesn't die, and not only am I happy that he doesn't die, I'm happy that they have the, like, 2-second shot with him and Anne Hathaway there, because then I make up this whole thing in my head that's just ridiculous. And I kind of feel
Please,
like that. There's,
I kind of want to hear that.
You got to stop. You're embarrassing yourself, dude.
I know, but I'm just saying, you know, and that's how I feel when I see a movie like this. You know, it's this, like Jeremy said, it's like this, like, alternate, you know, fantasy reality that everybody kind of wants to see, like where Hitler gets his. You know, he doesn't die shooting himself in some bunker.
What I guess I'm saying is, since it is some alternate reality fantasy, are we allowed to have this discussion about violence and slavery and racism and all this, or even allowed to have it, because that's not really the movie we watched. That's not the movie that was portrayed to us.
I think if this movie was made by somebody else and it lacked certain Tarantino quirks, maybe. But for me, I think that this conversation, I mean, it could certainly go that way. I feel like it's a lot less warranted talking about a movie like this than it would be talking about a movie like, I don't know. I don't even have an example.
White men can, yeah, can jump.
Amistad or something. they were dealing with slavery, and maybe they, you know, there was some controversy about the way that certain historical events were represented or something.
Right, but I mean, okay. And just to play devil's advocate, Tarantino uses slavery and the Holocaust as tools or motivations for their characters to get revenge on in these two narratives. Like in Kill Bill, that's something that it's an awful thing that happens to her, but ultimately it's a fiction created by him within this story. But he, instead of doing that, he uses the Holocaust and slavery to motivate his characters. And Tyson just identified that he gets some sort of satisfaction, and I think everyone else would agree, in seeing a slave hit back and Jews, you know, blow
kill
up
Hitler.
And kill Hitler. But, you know, I think a lot of people, and I don't think either of those movies, I think Django got it much worse than Inglourious Basterds, but I think a lot of people had trouble with that because it's sort of like mass media for the masses in this time that doesn't really deal with the issues, but instead kind of uses them in a manipulative way to make it more enjoyable for the audience. Which, I mean, again, like Michael Haneke said in that interview, is sort of what Steven Spielberg did in Schindler's List, and that was a really bold moment for me because I kind of woke up and was like, wow, and while I get that that is a very sensitive subject and that his Haneke's reaction to that is probably a lot more due to the fact that he grew up in post-war, you know, Austria or Germany than we have, but he's got a sensitivity, and in that sense, I think that really makes sense.
Right. Well, Che, let me ask you. I was going to go one way, but now that you said it, do you think that as a filmmaker, Tarantino this is a two-part question, has a responsibility, if he's going to touch on these issues at all, to deal with them with maybe compassion's not the right word, but deal with them differently than he did? And secondly, do you feel like he would have been in a better position to do this, or it would have been less controversial were he Jewish or black or, you know, a little bit more closely, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for.
I know exactly what you're saying.
You know,
I'll answer the second question.
Because you take Spielberg, for example, is Jewish and made this movie, and he obviously dealt with it, you know, in a completely different way. And
think about how bad Django would have been if Spike Lee directed.
Right. My point is that, but to the second question, I also don't think any of those filmmakers should limit themselves at all. I think what makes Quentin Tarantino the filmmaker that he is that he has never gone to film school or never wanted to be, Jean-Luc Godard or he's never wanted to be, David Lean, whatever. That's the wrong. I'm just saying, I think he wants to be the kind of filmmaker that he is. He's never had an agenda in his films. I mean, I think what's genius about him is that he takes all these influences, all these in the French New Wave and the Hong Kong stuff and all these elements, but then they come into his movies, but not in a postmodern way. It's like it's just a part of his being. It's like and he's the ultimate auteur in that sense, and that he just writes whatever he wants, and I think very little is considered, and I don't think artists should ever do that. I don't think they should ever censor themselves or consider how their work is going to be interpreted outside of what they want to present. If they're successful and at what they do, they will, you know, continue to do their art or whatever. But my point is, I think once you put that out on the screen, while you've had the bravery to, while you've had the I don't know, the guts to do that, you also have to deal with the repercussions, and that's how we as a society or as reviewers representing that society will you know, deconstruct and criticize it if it doesn't, you know, if it offends us or offends other people. I mean, I don't want to. My problems with Spike Lee are that he criticizes Tarantino as a filmmaker. I mean, if he as a black person had trouble with the slavery elements, that's another thing. But I mean,
right.
There's sort of. I just feel like
that's a good point.
There's a code of.
Well, he doesn't. He only criticizes him as a white filmmaker, I think. Right? He only had problems with him directing it because he wasn't African American.
I think his – well, that might have been in when that Jackie Brown controversy came out. But from what I understand, he thought – I think he said he's just not going to see it because it was disrespectful to his ancestors, which I think is a legitimate complaint. But I don't think that Spike Lee as a filmmaker should be criticizing other filmmakers because of – you know, I think there is a – like I said, that we don't want to be inhibited by our – by outside sources, and that and he's part of that world. Like, no one would want to go back and have Spike Lee make sure that everything and Do the Right Thing was appropriate. You know, I mean, that movie dealt with some serious issues as well. And was it fair to everybody? Probably not. But that's why it's interesting. I mean, movies aren't interesting unless if you know a great movie will offend people. And Tyson touched on an interesting thing that I wanted to get to a little bit later, but yeah, I've been criticized and talked with some people about the racism in the gray area. And I mean, again, like, here's my answer to that in short. Like, I don't want to tell anybody, if racism or not, how to feel about my movie. Like, I don't think that's my right. Like, I make movies so that people will absorb them, and I don't want to tell them what it's about, and I don't want to say you're right or wrong and how you feel that. Like, I think we go to great lengths in order to make that not apparent, that we're making a movie that I want a lot of different interpretations on. And so it's hard for me to argue with people when they're like, yeah, I was offended by your movie. I mean, I don't know what to say to that. Like, well, okay. Then a lot of people aren't offended, you know? It's like, that's kind of what you have to deal with. But I'll tell you what, like Tarantino's answer to these questions was, you know, it's just a movie. Like, we're having fun. And I think that's actually a really good argument, though it does sound kind of trite, you know, if you don't think about it too hard. I think that's a really good argument. I mean, there is a sort of, you are sort of surrendering to a film when you go see it. And you kind of, and in this day and age when there's trailers and TV spots and everything, you know what you're going to expect. I mean, you know what to expect when you go into a movie. And I don't know. I think one argument is it's very difficult to argue that people should go and be offended by a movie.
I think what it ultimately comes down to, and I think it's what we've always sort of believed, and it's that you have to be able to, no matter what the subject matter is, no matter whether it's slavery or the Holocaust or World War II or whatever it is, you have to be able to put a film above that subject matter. Does the film work by itself? And then afterwards, if you want, you can talk about the subject matter it dealt with. But like with Django, I think we all agree that this film worked the way the filmmaker intended it to work, and as a piece of art. And I think that ultimately is above what the subject matter is, no matter what it is. And if it wasn't, like, if we put any subject matter, no matter how controversial it is, above any film, then all of a sudden the art of film is lost. You know, then even if there's one thing you either have to make a film very sensitively about, or you can't make a film about, or you have to make sure you please everyone with it, then all of a sudden that's the point of filmmaking is gone. So at least in my opinion, you always have to put the film as a piece of work above whatever the subject matter is. Now, can filmmakers go into a subject matter and make a film and it's done poorly, and then you really want to criticize it for being offensive or controversial or manipulative or whatever? Of course you can, but that doesn't mean they didn't have a right to make that film and that they shouldn't have dealt with any subject matter they wanted to.
Right. And it's kind of like a general answer to that question. I think if a movie is if a filmmaker is doing what a filmmaker should do, and Jeremy, you and I have discussed it on the podcast before, that someone is asking questions as opposed to answer them. In other words, I mean, that's kind of a very mm-hmm. specific way to put it, but, you know, like, it took me a while to absorb, like, all the criticism from the gray area, but a lot of things that I felt were, that I ultimately, we ultimately succeeded in doing was that a lot of people had a lot of different thoughts about what it was about, you know? And that was a compliment, even if a lot of those thoughts were that they didn't like it or they didn't like the characters or other, you know. I think if you come out with a lot of different, you know, answers to these questions that the filmmaker is asking, then you've done your job in a sense. And if you're and to speak to the greater point of that, if you're dealing with difficult subject matter and you haven't you know, put an argument out there that could make your audience decide one way or the other, then you've done your job and you've asked this question, these questions of society, which is what's important, I think, at least when you're dealing with difficult subjects.
Yeah, it's the same thing, I think, with a comedian. Like, if you were to ask a comedian, is there any subject matter that's off limits? And I think, you know, most good comedians would say, no, it's all in how you deal with them.
Yeah,
it's right. all in how you present the joke, you know. And I think it's the same way with filmmaking. Like, there, you know, Michael Haneke has a right to believe that the shower scene in Schindler's List was manipulative, and maybe it was, but it worked in the context of the film and at that moment. I haven't seen Schindler's List for a while, but I do remember that shower scene, and it did stick with me in the way that Spielberg had intended it to stick with me. So did Spielberg do anything wrong there? I don't think so. You know, so that's sort of a good example of what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Tyson, you said you just came out of Django feeling a little bit, not that you were sensitive, but that you were feeling a little awkward or a little bit.
Very much so. And look, I don't know if we can even keep this in the podcast. I don't know if part of that is because I date a girl who has only dated black guys before me. And
I thought you didn't see race. What happened to that?
No, I'm just saying, like, she's particularly sensitive. She's right. One of those people. We had a conversation about this the other night, and she's like, I know this sounds corny and you can laugh, but, like, I just see people for people. And look, I think that I'm not prejudiced at all. I just think I'm a little bit more willing to joke about things because I know that I don't mean them. So maybe, you know, I'm not embarrassed to admit that I'm not that way. Like, you know, if I see somebody, I think that my gut reaction is to assess things in a certain way and not from a standpoint of prejudice, just because that's how I, you know, process what's going on. And so when I saw this, I just felt like, and I don't know if this was deliberate or it was just a byproduct of how I was taking it in. You know, I just felt a little bit uncomfortable. One scene in particular, when we're introduced to Leo's character and we see this firsthand, it is the only Mandingo fight in the whole movie. And, you know, he's sitting there like kicking this guy while he's, you know, fighting to the death with another guy, you know, because he knows that there's, you know, with no regard for any ramification because he's in this position of power. And I don't know. I just felt a little bit uncomfortable.
But isn't that what you're supposed to feel?
Certainly.
In that
I think it is. I think, and that's why I feel like this, you know, maybe I'm not in a good position to say this as a privileged white guy, but this sort of bullshit argument about insensitivity is a little unfair because I feel like this brings to the forefront a lot of what are probably pretty realistic regular occurrences that slaves went through during this period of time, and black people, and a lot of things that you might not be exposed to. And I just felt
I think that's dangerous to look at Django and say this is what anyone went through. I think that may be a tricky. Right.
And I might be talking out of both sides of my mouth after that conversation we had earlier, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah, there's not even confirmation that Mandingos actually existed.
Right. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of movies like this. Where you get sort of a firsthand Schindler's List-esque.
But were you offended because you were sitting next to someone who you thought was sensitive to it?
No, I was just saying that to be self-deprecating because my penis is a lot smaller than Oliver X's boyfriend.
Now that is a stereotype.
Right. Luckily, we edit these podcasts.
But
so.
See, I also think, but Tyson, I think you pose a good point. I think it would be, I mean, let's say Mallory.
Your penis is smaller.
Yeah.
Let's say Mallory made a movie, you know, and she doesn't see race, just to play devil's advocate. That would also be offensive. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't think people saying I don't see race it makes them a better person. I don't think
especially
if you're an artist and she
usually disclaims that because she knows how ridiculous that might sound to even say it. You know, I mean, she's one of those people. She's like the polar opposite of my grandfather. You know what I mean? She's just like, that's just how she's wired. Like, so I know what you mean, and that's not really what it had to do with. I just think I felt guilty because I thought, you know, 60 years ago we lived in a country where, you know, racism was still a big deal. You know, like that. It's just crazy to think that, you know, these things have happened, and us where we're at now, we would whoever, I don't know which one of you just said that about it, but there's like, you know, there. As a you know, middle class white male, like, what could possibly be said to affect you, really? And that's why I just felt like, you know, a little uncomfortable, because you're in this position where you're dealing with some really sensitive subject matter that might be pretty offensive to some people there, and you didn't know. Like, I wouldn't have been at all surprised if we're in this movie and somebody got up and just said this is fucking bullshit and walked out, white or black.
All right, Noah, we really haven't discussed, and I, Chapin, maybe you know more than I do, because I haven't really, I mean, I vaguely heard the criticisms and the controversies of this movie, but I haven't really read into it. How, in general, did the black community feel about this movie? I haven't heard that they really, I think it was all, like, white people that have found the issues with it, white people and Spike Lee.
Haven't heard anything.
Yeah. Right.
But I think, yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you even worry about that? You know? Like, should you?
In a general sense, or in this sense of this specific movie, or what do you mean?
I mean, do you? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to say this. It's like, should we concern ourselves with
how anybody but ourselves feels about it?
Well, yeah, like,
we speak for ourselves, really?
I don't know. That sounds insensitive, but I mean, I think that's like the other
argument. It's not insensitive if you talk about it in the fact that really we can only speak for ourselves. I mean, who are we to speak for anybody else?
Exactly. I mean, I think there's a different level of – I think that there's an equal – maybe not as bad as a, you know, a Klansman or something, but I think there's something like – listening to people speak openly about race and how they feel, there's like a bravery to that. There's like an honor to that in a weird way, even if it's not a particularly appropriate or PC element, or, you know, if it's not politically correct. Like, you know, when I say these things, like, I want to be sensitive to it at the same time, but I don't want it not to exist. I think if everybody comes out, we do live in this like 24-hour media cycle where, you know, there has to be news all the time. So anytime like any issue happens, you know, people are going to come out with comments and talking heads and all this stuff. And it was like even like the Fox News talking head guys were complaining that this movie was racist against white people. It's like, I mean,
there was this
like, you know, this black man killing, like, because, but that is an argument. I mean, Tarantino was fetishizing the killing of white slave owners. Like, sure. and people were getting off on that. Like, that's still an argument. And then they tie it in with like all this, all, you know, and it works with their agenda about promoting, lax gun control. Like, it's crazy.
I just don't think you can have these arguments and understand the film for what it is at the same time. You can't have this argument about the racism and then also understand and enjoy the film for what it really is. Like, you can't have it both ways. Either you didn't get the movie or you got the movie and enjoyed it for what it was. You can't be like, oh, you know, this movie is offensive in this way, or that way, but I sat through it and enjoyed it as a revenge fantasy. Like, I don't know. I just have a hard time with this with even this sort of conversation after enjoying the movie, for what I figure, and knowing Tarantino and having seen every one of his movies, his intentions were. All right, in honor of Django, we are going to do our top five Tarantino scenes, which I believe we've done on this podcast before, but with a new movie, it doesn't hurt to revisit them. So we will, Tyson, we'll start with you. Your number five Tarantino scene.
My number five Tarantino scene. Obviously, I had a tough time with this and have quite a few honorable
mentions. Hard.
It's pretty tough, yeah. But ironically, oh no, what am I saying? Shut the fuck, idiot. Okay, my number five scene was the tavern card game in Inglourious Basterds. Maybe not maybe it doesn't stand out quite like the other that I thought about picking, which was the opening cabin scene with Christoph Waltz and Monsieur Lapadite. But this scene is great because of the tension, you know, when the captain or the sergeant or whoever that German officer comes in and decides to play the card game, and he's just detestable and you want him to leave, and you finally get Michael Fassbender breaking character, and it's a great scene. A lot of fun. And the guy goes, say auf Wiedersehen to your Nazi balls.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for me to disagree with that. Yeah. Chapin, what do you got?
I like that scene because of the way he gives away himself, which is the best.
Yeah, with a little, we say three.
Yeah. Which when I watched that movie, I had the pleasure of watching that movie with my dad for the first time when he saw it, and he spent a lot of time in Germany, and he identified it right away, even before the film happened. Yeah, so that's actually a really insightful thing on his part.
Sometimes I'm convinced Roy doesn't watch movies like normal humans watch movies. He just watches them to notice fuck-ups or inaccuracies or whatever.
Yeah, anachronisms are the best. Yeah. They didn't have rippable plastic in 1942. Okay. my number five is the there's a name for it, but I forget what it is. The battle with the crazy 88 from Kill Bill Volume 1.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what that's called. The murder of Oren Ishii. But now that I think about it, I'd also like to share that with that anime section about the history of Oren Ishii.
Yeah, those are the two that I almost – yeah, those two. I didn't get in with Kill Bill, but those are definitely honorable mentions for me, both of those. Yeah. And what's so great about it – and this is what – and I'll say my number five is also Tyson's number five, and I can it's the basement scene of the bar. Yeah. But what he's so good at, and I actually have started to realize that because I am directing The Pillow Man, Martin McDonagh is also really good at is earning the literally earning these moments that are tension filled as well as comedic releases. It's like nobody does it better than those two guys, I don't think. I really don't think. Like, earning their laughs. They're not just throwaway jokes. They're not just jokes that it's funny at the moment because somebody said something funny. It's something that's been built up to those moments. And a lot of times they are tension releases. Like, you're at the edge of your seat and then something happens that, you know, lets people laugh and release their tension for a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tarantino is so good at it. And, like, for example, in Chapin's example, when that whole cartoon anime and that thing is just intense, and then we go through this, literally, we just find out this whole life of this character and the violence and the blood and the, you know, and the horrific experiences this person's had as a little girl. And then we cut back to the bride, and the first thing she says is, first things first, wiggle your big toe. And it's like the way that he is able to go to earn those jokes, I just appreciate so much. And he does it in that bar basement scene as well, because there's just so much tension there before we get to a point where we can release it with a joke, and then boom, right into the violence after. So, so that's my number five.
Just nice. Before you go, there's this play that I really want to see the last play that he wrote, I think, which was called A Behanding in Spokane. That was
Martin McDonagh wrote.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was, when it debuted on Broadway, it was starring Christopher Walken, Sam Rockwell.
Rockwell. Oh, and Anthony Mackie. Yeah, yeah.
And then some, famous woman.
I would love to see that.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Whose turn is it? Mine.
Tyson's.
It's mine. The famous woman, it was a girl, remember? It was Elia Kazan's granddaughter, oh, right, I think. Yeah. Okay, my number four. Hold on, I'm trying to find my phone. My number four was the Lewis lost the car scene from Jackie Brown. And Jackie Brown is definitely my favorite Tarantino movie. I thought other movies had better specific scenes, but this scene, every single time I watch it, I laugh so hard, and it's so perfect. The actors are so perfect, and it's weird because you see them as two characters like run the whole gamut of emotions throughout the movie, and there's all that tension at the very beginning. And I just love how condescending she is and how she's putting him down while they're walking through the thing. It's so funny. It's a great scene.
Yeah, it's probably the most notable scene from Jackie Brown, and Jackie Brown as an overall film is just great, but it doesn't have quite the standout scene
exactly
as other movies have, but that one probably definitely is the most notable.
All right, my number four is the conversation towards the end of Kill Bill Volume 2 between Bill and the bride when he shoots her with the dart.
God damn it.
That scene to me is one of the most memorable scenes from both of those films. And there's really no action or anything.
Because it was two films to earn that moment, you know, exactly, to earn that dialogue.
Yeah.
Anything where he's talking, where David Carradine is talking, is really entertaining.
And that's a good point about earning it, Jeremy. Like, I think that, he doesn't betray us in that, like, he doesn't make that last, and maybe this isn't true for his most recent two movies, but he doesn't make that last climactic moment a big battle like we've seen. You know, it's actually this, like, conversation, which I think is an interesting way to do it, and it's kind of, like, even more satisfying than this, you know, a big shootout or a fight.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I totally agree to the point where my number four is the same exact scene. And I wanted to have a Kill Bill scene in this, and I was like, what really sums up that movie the best, and how he is able to build between the violence and the dialogue and the tension. And I mean you can't beat that last confrontation between Bill and the bride, and that whole spiel about Superman, and you feel for those two characters, and you feel for them as a couple, and as in a way as they care for each other, but you also totally understand why it has to go the direction that it ends up going, and that's hard to do. That's really hard to do, and of course he's able to pull it off brilliantly.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, my number three was the wolf to the rescue scene at the tail end of Pulp Fiction. I thought it was Harvey Keitel is so great in that scene. I love the really short scene between Sam Jackson and John Travolta in the bathroom. And then I also really love when they're going over the car before. It's just great because, you know, they spend all of this time talking about, you know, rectifying the situation that's really time sensitive, and then it's just done in an instant, and it's a great scene.
It's like this balance between the mundane and the extraordinary is what Tarantino is so good at, and I think it's what's made Tarantino who Tarantino is and why we know him. Everything from the Royale with cheese and Whopper scene to that one in the back of the car, or in the bathroom when, you know, where Jules cares about keeping his linens and his towels clean of blood while they've already shot a guy's head off. You know, it's these juxtapositions that just make it so funny, and I think they're so funny because Tarantino does concentrate so much on the mundane as well as you know, the larger plot points.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. That's I mean, you could talk for hours about his ability to take those types of situations and make them entertaining. I mean, arguably, although I didn't put it on my list, my opinion, the best scene in Inglourious Basterds is that very first scene with Christoph Waltz. And it's just this long, boring conversation. Like, if you listen to your parents have it, you'd smash your head through a window. I mean, who cares about it? But it's...
If I started listening to my parents and they're talking about where the Jews are headed,
you know what I mean. I just
feel a little bit concerned. Right. No, I know. All right. So, Chapin, you're number what, three?
Mm-hmm. My number three is also the basement scene from Inglourious Basterds. Yep.
We already talked about it. That's sad, I think. All right. My number three is the adrenaline shot scene in Pulp Fiction. I don't know what else to say about it. It's probably maybe the most famous scene in that movie, but again, it's that mix of normal confusion that everyone would have, with the backdrop being this woman's life that's at stake. So you obviously have these characters who are having these moments that I think any one of us would have, like, Where is the shot? How do I inject this shot into this person? I've never done anything like that. You do it. No, you do it. Do I stab her three times? No, you just stab her once. Like, all that sort of thing, which obviously makes us all laugh. But then Tarantino slows the action down and takes those moments right before, and then builds the tension up to a point where, builds the tension up. I don't know. It's pretty masterful in that way, and it's what makes Tarantino Tarantino, I guess. And it's also a reference to, because I watched it recently, Panic in Needle Park with Al Pacino. There's almost a very similar scene in that movie.
Nice. Okay, so I'm up next. My number two was... we already talked about it. Well, it was the scene before the tranquilizer dart scene where Bill is making BB a sandwich. And I felt like, for similar reasons, I really liked it because, at least the first time I saw it, there was so much tension. You didn't know whether or not something was just going to kick off, even though their daughter was there. And like we've talked about, you know, David Carradine, just the way he carries himself in that movie in general, he's just enjoyable to watch. And he's, you know, he's just whipping together this sandwich, but... I don't know. It's a great scene.
Yeah, he does it with such kind of...
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
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 Okay, my number two is, again, a lot of great scenes from Jackie Brown. That might also be my favorite Tarantino movie. I don't know. But besides everything that Michael Keaton does, it's the end scene when... Pam Grier is singing across 110th Street while driving away in Sam Jackson's car.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of a it's this very long. I thought it was a really bold move. You know, it's this very long shot to end this movie, and yeah, I like this.
Oh wow! So far, we have no Reservoir Dogs. It's tough, My number two could have been a Reservoir Dog scene, but I decided to go with the Say What Again scene from Pulp Fiction. We've already been introduced to these characters as sort of, in a way, just happy-go-lucky normal guys that like to talk about hamburgers, and then we see them put in their position of their professions, and I don't know, it's the dialogue there is just so good. Is so good. Mm-hmm. And Sam Jackson just, I mean, I don't think he's ever been better.
Does he look like a bitch?
Exactly. So that's my number two.
Nice. Okay, my number one, it's not really exciting, but it's a scene that you know, when I remember, I first, you guys all have these great stories about movies that were really impactful to you, and I wish that I had one, but I really vividly remember the first time I saw Pulp Fiction and how I thought, well, this movie is different from a lot of movies that I would see, and this is the scene that I really liked, was the dinner and a dance scene at the diner between John Travolta and Uma Thurman. The conversation they have at the table is great, and then I think that the dance is such a great payoff. You get to see them. You know, there's that really famous line where she says, "I do believe that my husband, your boss, told you to take me out." You know, and it's great. Plus, it's always fun to see John Travolta dance. So,
and that
it's
also
just, Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeremy.
No, I was just gonna say it's amazing that like we literally could pick from a hat, and I could switch these all around, and it could be another great top five, right, and that would be in it.
Absolutely.
That is also my number one. And it's that whole segment, which they call Vincent Vega and Marcellus Wallace's wife.
Yeah.
I think that that's, Jeremy, you made a good point about the mundane and the extraordinary mixed together. And I think to even make that a little bit more, hone that a little bit, it's also, you know, these sort of ordinary things surrounded by extraordinary circumstances. So in that case, like, you know, we know that if this doesn't go down, that I mean, if what's her name, Mia Wallace, dies, there's this huge impact, and that whole movie is kind of like that, in that there's these like big, greater things going on around these scenes that happen. He's kind of like the anti Chris Nolan. Like, I feel like Christopher Nolan, like a lot of his movies are just it's like entire montages of these like big things that are happening, like these big events, but there never really is any meat to it. There's no scenes like where people are actually interacting in a dialogue, and I feel like that's all especially Pulp Fiction is a great example of that. These like these little mundane things surrounded by these sort of unseen consequences and forces moving, which kind of gives them a little bit more impact than just dialogue.
Nice. I couldn't agree more.
Okay, so who's the next number one?
All right, so yeah, my number one, I think it's already been at least it's been mentioned, but I don't know if it's made a list. It is that opening scene of Inglourious Basterds, and I mean, I think that, and I said it when I first saw it, I said it when I first read that scene before I even saw Inglourious Basterds, that this will be taught in cinema classes for years to come on how to build tension. And, I mean, it is. It's a masterclass in that. The way that, I mean, first of all, Christoph Waltz and how great he is in that movie, and to come out and to show this and introduce this character the way he does, and then to know the way that Tarantino reveals, you know, where and when he reveals that this person is hiding Jews, and the way that Christoph Waltz's character sort of gets at him to have to tell the truth. I mean, it's unbelievable. And what's really great about it is like we don't know these people under the floorboards. Like, we don't know who they are, but we're still like the tension couldn't be higher, and we still care about them so much, and we don't want this guy to find them. And then also to top that all off, Christoph Waltz is much as you don't want to say it, he's kind of likable. He's kind of endearing in a weird way. And it's like, it's I don't know, just in the way he moves his camera and the way that whole scene is lit and cut, it's just, it's unbelievable, really. And I mean, if I had to pick one scene to show somebody and say, this is how you know, make films, I'd probably pick that scene, opening scene from Inglourious Basterds.
No doubt. It's a damn good one. Okay, did you have any honorable mentions? I had a couple.
I mean, pretty much every scene from every movie, but yeah.
I had a couple specifics that I thought warranted mentioning. One was Bud's late for work scene from Kill Bill Volume 2. Michael Madsen is so great in that movie. I mean, I know he's probably just kind of playing every character that he plays in any movie, but when he comes into work and that guy goes, "Is that Bud? Send him the fuck in here." And he gets chewed out. I really liked. And then the Jackie's release into Max's custody scene from Jackie Brown. whereas they did that slow walk. And it's like you said, Chapin, it's a little bit risky to do the, you know, to just let those scenes play out, you know, to just let them breathe and kind of do their thing. But when they have her walk all the way down and they just keep cutting between her walking and then between Mike Lowell's face, I mean, Mark Forrester's face, they that's really good. And then my last one was the Calvin's theory of evolution scene from Django Unchained when Leo is cutting open the skeleton or the skull. I thought was great.
That's definitely the standout scene, I think, from that. I had the buried alive scene in Kill Bill.
Nice.
I think that's done so well, just the way that he literally puts every nail into that coffin and the way the light drains from that frame. And then, of course, the stuck in the middle with you scene from Reservoir Dogs. What else can you say? I mean, we didn't talk that much about Reservoir Dogs, but there's that scene. There's the tipping scene. There's the Why Am I Mr. Pink scene. All of that.
Yeah, very true. Nice.
All right, boys.
Yeah.
All right. Let me close it out. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this very Tarantino edition of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. So join us next week when we discuss, I believe we're going to try and see a more. If not, we're going to see Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. So one of those two or maybe both for next week. So thanks for listening.
All right.
Nice. Tons of fun.
Good work. That was only an hour and 35 minutes. Fuck. No one wants to hear us talk that long.
No.
All right, bros.
All right, boys.
Love you tons. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later, guys.
All right.
I'm staying. I'm finishing my coffee. Enjoying my coffee.